Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm getting geared up for the new year. I hope you are as well.
Well, you know, we've been, last couple weeks on the show, we've been winding down 2016, predicting 2017. It's all been kind of a end of year stuff, but I still can't believe that we're at the end of the year. It's just, yeah. It's gone by so fast. Been a weird year. I think people, you know, have
that is a safe thing to say. Regardless of your political affiliations or, 2016 has been strange.
It's just
strange.
Been a very strange year. And I think one of the things we might have left out in our show on Tuesday was just predicting the weirdness quotient for 2017.
It's going to happen.
Is the world going to double down and weird becomes the new normal? Or do we, you know, breath of relief and it's less weird in 2017? It's just as well we left that alone because I don't know. I can't predict what 2017 is going to be like.
It could go either way. I mean, after all, it will be Donald Trump as president. So, I mean, you know, that's...
that alone opens up plenty of possibilities for weirdness. There's no question about it. Yeah, that's an excellent point you raised. Or we may just be so used to him, you know, or maybe weird becomes the new normal in 2018. We'll see how that goes. But hey, forget about 2017. We're going to look ahead. We're going to look ahead to the year 2027. And we're going to talk tonight about what's become normal by then, or at least what might we see happening by then. And we got a list of predictions similar to what we did on Tuesday, but just a little bit farther out. Take it away, Stephen. What do you got?
Okay, so on Tuesday's show, I said that we're going to be getting regular news of some individuals, always the connected, the rich, the, whatever, seeking regular treatment for aging, right? I mean, or seeking some sort of treatment for aging. Well, that's for this coming year. Well, by 2027, Phil, I'm saying that you and I'm bringing it right home to us. You and I will be getting regular treatment for aging by 2027. Provided we make it, right? So, I mean, it's, I'm saying that normal folks will be getting, you no longer have to be rich, connected, or have a particular medical need for it beyond having had some birthdays, right? So, we're talking, normal folks will start be getting treatment, and it's going to be better treatment for aging than the billionaires are getting, you know, starting now, right? So,
yep.
So that's something to look forward to, Phil. That's a big deal. We've said things like, you know, 40 is the new 30 and stuff like that for years, but it could very well literally be that, you know, given some effective treatment for aging. So
here's my one question about that. And this remains to be seen because I agree. I think you're absolutely spot on with this prediction. Will it be described as anti-aging treatment? Will it be described as life extension treatment, or will it be seen as some kind of overarching, you know, health optimization, wellness, keeping yourself, you know what I'm saying?
It'll be packaged initially. It'll be marketed as wellness and all this nonsense, but eventually, I say nonsense, but you know, it'll be marketed that way. Because it's so transformative for society that in order to buy it or to buy in it first, it'll be kind of sold that way, I think. But I think ultimately by 2027 we'll be calling it what it is, and that's treatment for aging, life extension, however you want to call it. But we're not going to be disguising it by marketing terms any longer. By then, it'll be so obvious. You know, when grandma starts looking like, she's 30 again, and she's pushing 70, you know, we'll call it what it is. So
I wonder. That'll be the thing to keep an eye on. Because I think it gets blessed under the cover of, well, we're doing things to make sure that people aren't needing to go into hospice, and they're not going to have this long, painful, debilitating period of decay, right? They're going to be healthier at the end of their life. I think that's what sells it, and that's what immediately overcomes the whole, we weren't meant to live that long, blah blah blah, nonsense kind of arguments. I just wonder if that terminology won't stick.
It could, but I'm saying that ultimately, when the technology is good enough, we'll call it what it is.
Yeah.
And stop. And I think, but I'm with you initially that it'll be called wellness or whatever, or whatever. But it's proactive medicine. You can call it you come up with a lot of different terms.
There you go, Stephen. You may have just named it. It might be called that.
Proactive medicine.
Something along those lines.
I could see a doctor saying, "I practice proactive medicine now. How would you like to feel 30?"
Right, and everyone will know that means that you go there for life extension. Okay, well, I think that's a big one. How about this one? And I like that impacted us, and I look forward to my proactive treatments. How about this one, Stephen? In 2027, you and I and our peers and people like us, by and large, are going to be driven by our cars for almost all our transportation needs, that we won't even think about it that much, that our cars will be essentially self-driving cars and that they're probably going to be electric. I think that's a fairly safe prediction for 2027. And I'll tell you, my earlier version of this was, my version of this, I should say, was that we'll see as many self-driving cars on the roads as we see human-driven cars. But I like this take on it even better, right? That it's going to be us. We're going to be the ones getting driven around because that's going to be normal.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be normal because it will be seen to be so much safer than human-driven cars, to the point that, it might not be by 2027 that laws are being passed to outlaw human driving. But I think that there will be a number of ways in which society will begin to put pressure on people to get out to allow the cars to do the driving. You recall that that Whole Foods is putting premium parking places for electric cars. There may also be premium parking places for self-driven cars. You want to drive yourself? Well, you know what? You get to walk from the outermost rim of the parking lot to come into the store. There'll be things like that.
Something like that. You don't really need a parking place for a self-driving car. It'll drop you off at the front of the store and then come pick you up, right?
And something not so subtle, things like how about your insurance. You pay practically nothing for automobile insurance on your self-driving car, or you can pay
through the nose and it's going to go way up. That's right.
It's not unlike you want to put your 16-year-old in a in a Corvette. Well, fine. Here you get to pay two times the cost of the note on the car, right? So, well, it'll be much like that for people who want to continue to drive themselves. It'll be
that is a great analogy. Everybody who wants to drive will effectively, relatively, be trying to insure a 16-year-old. With a Corvette who's already had a DUI and a couple of accidents, right? I mean, that's
that's the way the insurance company will look at you. They will have a jaundiced eye when they're looking at you. And I think that's what will ultimately drive most of us into these cars. If the thought of being driven is not a is not a good idea for you anyway, you'll do it because of the expense of not doing
these other incentives. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense.
Yep. Okay, well, let's look at number three here. Our devices will be everywhere. And I'm not talking, not just cell phones and iPads and, different devices. I mean, just our devices will be the walls of our house, our, our clothing, our cars, our, surfaces of the desk at our, at the places we work or wherever. They'll be everywhere. They'll be linked to us. So even if we're in a public place and we sit down and the table in front of us can become our own personal device, right? They'll be more powerful than obviously than anything we have right now. And they're going to be unplugged a lot of, You know, to the extent that they're movable, they won't have to be plugged in directly into the power. And how do they accomplish that? Well, they'll be charged remotely by you know, radio waves or whatever, and that's how we'll handle our devices at that time. So it's going to be an interesting world by then, Phil. I might be being a little conservative because I'm not talking about having things plugged directly into our brains by then.
Right.
I'm just talking
which
just
is
normal.
We will probably be toying with that at least anyway by then.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you the thing I think I like most about this scenario is just that doing away with that hassle of, oh, where can I recharge my phone? Oh, I got to recharge. Oh, it's almost out of power. You know, that coming technology where things can be recharged, where getting a charge will be kind of the same as getting a Wi-Fi signal, right? It's like there will be resources available to tap into that, and you won't have to worry about something going dead on you all the time, which kind of, you know, that kind of ties back into something you were talking about on Tuesday, which is just the improvement of battery technologies. We'll have 10 years
right.
of that under our belts to really
yeah,
drive.
Yeah, we'll have 10 years of the year of the battery, right?
Yeah, exactly. 10 years of the battery in a row is going to deliver some serious independence where those devices are concerned. Also, they're just going to be so powerful. We won't think so then. I mean, we'll think they're pretty cool. But compared to, you know, if somebody could hand you one of them right now, you would just be dazzled by this thing, right? I mean, they're going
right.
to be amazing what they're going to what they're going to be able to do. And yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be we're going to be truly wired, aren't we?
Right. Absolutely. And unplugged. And you know, and it could be that it's things that we don't even think of normally as
truly wired,
you know,
without the wires. You're right. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, you could have things that are not, we don't normally think of as computers that are, you know, obviously by then computers is sort of an Internet of Things kind of proposition, but also, I mean, things that you would normally think of plugging in. I mean, kitchen appliances and things. Maybe even they will be sitting on your counter without a cord. That would be kind
right.
of nice. So,
wow.
We'll see.
We'll see. Okay. Well, how about this one? Let's go big. Let's go big. Let's go to the moon. Okay. By 2027, we're going to have multiple entities, and we're talking both nation states or collections of nation states and businesses that will have some kind of moon mission planned. Okay. And usually we're talking about probably a robotic, you know, we're going to send a probe up to the moon. We're going to send a robot up to the moon for some reason or other. But by then, by 2027, we should also see someone planning, if not actively working on, a manned mission to the moon as well. And I mention that as just part of an overarching, there's just going to be this big push into space as a commercial proposition, right? So we're going to see mining operations really begin. People are going to really have businesses in place. They're going to be putting infrastructure in place and starting to send stuff out. And whatever Elon Musk or whoever else picks up the mantle has done, we're going to see big, big steps towards putting humanity on Mars. What do you think? We're going to be much deeper into space in 10 years than we are right now.
There's a lot of resources on the moon. Helium-3. If we can ever get fusion reactors working for us, I mean that's practically unlimited power, and the best fuel for a fusion reactor is helium-3, which can't be found in any significant quantities on Earth. But lots of helium-3 is on the moon, and so
right.
there's that. There's ice water that could be had on the moon for both water and as well as oxygen and maybe the hydrogen as well, you know. So there's lots of resources, lots of reasons to go to the moon. You know, then we've got all kinds of reasons to go mine asteroids. You know, the rare earth elements. I think it's funny that we call it earth elements when we're going to the asteroids for them. But
rare lunar elements, yeah.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, we'll go wherever they are and get them because there's so much value there, and so in business reasons for doing so. Mars is sort of a different thing, isn't it? It's you know, you, it's not as cheap to get to Mars and bring things back from Mars, but it could be considered an outpost on the way to maybe deeper in the solar system. It certainly seems to be the best place to for humanity to have a second location, right?
Yep.
And Elon Musk has made it his goal to put people there. I would say our actual chance of getting humans on Mars by then, I'm going to put it at 50%. Having had a manned mission, you know, boots on the ground on Mars by 2027, I'll put it at 50%. Now, if you add another 10 years to it, I'd get, you know, you add 20 years to, you know, if I'm saying 20 years from now as opposed to 10, I'd put it near 100% that we've had somebody on Mars within 20 years. But within 10, I'd say 50%.
I think that's possible. If we were talking longer term, one of the things I would suggest as a possibility, I don't know that I'm making a prediction around this, but just an interesting possibility, is that those initial trips to Mars may become kind of like the Apollo missions to the moon. They might become this big accomplishment, but they don't end up making us permanent Mars residents or making Mars a permanent part of what we do in space, at least for the immediate term, just because as we start mining the asteroids and we start making a move out to where there's more resources and some of those kinds of things, we may decide, and this will happen naturally through the evolution of putting this stuff out there, we may decide that the biggest gravity well we even want to mess with is the moon. Right, and that we'll have a lot of stuff going on out in space, but that Mars is, you know, if you want all that gravity, just stay on Earth, right? Might be kind of a kind of an issue that people run into, because you don't have the same commercial drive to get to Mars, right? The drive to get to Mars is more, I don't know, just kind of the human achievement of it, right? You know, taking the next step in human evolution or whatever. And that may slow Mars down relative to some of these other things, but we'll see.
I think that the chance, put it this way, I don't think there's going to be a lot of flag planting missions to Mars. I think by the time we actually put boots on the ground, we're a lot more likely to be there for an extended stay than with the moon. Because the getting to Mars is so much harder that we'll want to do things while we're there that's going to take some time, you know. So it could very well be that that some of our first missions to Mars are semi-permanent, you know. So I don't know.
No, they may be. I didn't mean to suggest that they won't. But they might not have the momentum of, you know, we might not get the pizzeria on Mars, right? We might not have the city on Mars quite as soon as those plans.
Well, and the very fact that in a way I'm agreeing with you, Phil. I'm saying that we may be slowed in getting to Mars because we realize that when we do get there, we need to stay there.
It's
hard
enough
to get there that when we go, we're going to be packing heavy. You know what I'm saying? To set up shop for a while. So that's and the more I think about it, I'm wanting to bring that percentage from 50% on down, but I'll leave it at 50%.
The point is, we'll have people there, but will Mars be more like Antarctica is today, right? Where there's pretty much a permanent human presence, or will it be more like California in the Gold Rush, right? That's the somewhere between those two things, I think. That's
and I would suggest that the first mission to Mars will be something like Antarctica. We'll need to have a facility, something like that. And which means, you have to have a robotic presence first to build the facility before you even step foot there, right? So it's going to be, there's a lot of work to be done before we can step foot there. So
it's true. Okay, what's next?
Yeah. Okay, AI by then, we're talking 2027, AI will be inescapable. Every job will have some need for it. It's much the same as almost every job now, Phil, requires the use of a computer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, your local mechanic, the guy that runs the register at the grocery store, everybody has to use a computer now. Well, AI is going to be much the same. And because of that, because you got AI involved in everything, and being able to do things and to magnify the efforts of fewer individuals to do more things, I'm saying there's going to be fewer jobs as a result, and it's going to cause some societal upheaval. There's going to be some, in dealing with that, there's going to be some gnashing of teeth in the process. So. Anyway, I see that as a mixed prediction. Not necessarily optimistic or pessimistic. Just I see it coming though.
Yeah, I think one of the things we'll see is that major sections of employment will just disappear. Right? I mean, they'll be replaced by automation. We already see that happening anyway, but we'll see it happen in this kind of sweeping way. Little or no warning. And we won't be as surprised by it anymore. We won't be surprised by it at all. It'll just be like, oh, well, there's another set of things that people used to do that they aren't doing. I think one thing that will counter that to an extent is that less AI-reliant jobs will become much more prominent. You know, just as if you look in the world in the year 2017, how many more personal trainers are there today than there were in 2007, or say in 1997, right? How many more, hairdressers are there, right? If we look at those kinds of things that that are a little trickier to automate, or that things that people really do look for kind of a human touch in, that increases. Does it increase enough to offset? No, probably not even close. But that will be the one kind of mitigating, or the one kind of counter trend to that.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see how that, that plays out. Do we all become yoga instructors or, counselors of some kind or something like that in the future where AI is doing, bakers, I don't know what it would be, where AI is doing everything else. We won't all become that, but I think that we'll see a lot more of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's safe. I was going to add masseuse to that list. Things like that. There will be other things that businesses will move perhaps from retail to more experienced based type things, and I think people will be a necessary part of experience based shopping or whatever. You're going to need people for that, and so I think that I see that as some of the ways that the job market will change. Okay, let's see it. It will be shown. Okay, go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
I was going to say along these lines, we will see new ways of dealing with post scarcity. Okay, we've been talking about post employment and post scarcity, and the idea that keeps getting thrown up like ad nauseum on Facebook is basic income. You got all these people pushing for basic income, but what we're going to see is multiple new ideas for how to deal with this AI driven economy, this automation driven economy that's less human reliant for production, and they're going to be introduced alongside basic income, and that something will have emerged as the clear leader. Maybe it will be basic income. Maybe it'll be something else. But there's going to be like a whole new approach to the economy by 2027 that we'll be at least flirting with, if not actually, quasi committed to, that something in addition to people work for a living will be going on by 2027. At least one.
I think different countries will be trying different things.
Yeah,
and all the friction between countries that brings, we'll see some of that too. So, but yeah, it's inescapable. I think that AI is going to be a big part of the reason those things happen. AI and with additional automation and ubiquitous computing is going to be a huge part of that picture. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead. What you got?
All right. So I mentioned on Tuesday's show that we got some billionaires that are involved in pushing as a project, attacking disease holistically. Okay. We're going to say, here's how we, here's what a virus, how we can attack viruses as a whole. You know, viruses all have this one Achilles heel. Bacterial infections all have this Achilles heel. And we're going to, you know, and let's attack it all. And while we're at it, let's get better at diagnostics so that we can attack cancers and we can data mine that problem to where it's, you know, not much of a problem anymore. So I'm saying that, you know, we're beginning that process starting in 2017, but by then we'll have 10 years of this. And it's going to be shown by then, I think, that attacking all disease by way of data mining, instant diagnostics, all of this, it will make a significant strides. And I think that not only will it be a bunch of billionaires throwing in on this and maybe in some other individuals that are well-to-do, but also governments. They're going to see the success of these projects, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and others, and they're going to start throwing in on this too. So I'm saying that by 2027, Phil, we'll already be getting. And the reason governments do this is because they see success. We will already be getting sick less often, and when we are sick, we're going to recover quicker. And that's going to have a huge impact on medicine. And so I'm saying in 10 years, it will already be getting some. We will not have conquered disease in 10 years, but we will see that we're on the right track by then. So,
you know what's interesting, Stephen, is this almost a restatement of your first one. The regular treatment for aging and / the elimination of disease. Those two things are so close, right? They have so much to do with each other that it's almost like we're gonna bounce back and forth between those two ideas. But what this prediction brings to my mind is an analogy I hadn't thought of before. But I bet by 2027, Zuckerberg's big, ambitious, big, hairy, audacious goal to end all human disease will be pretty much everybody's goal. That it will have gained the kind of acceptance as the future that, say, self-driving cars is gaining now, right? Where we went from this, that's a crazy idea, whoever heard of such a thing, to everybody pretty much sees it coming, right? I think by 2027, everybody will see this coming. Everybody will say, this is where we're going, and be on board with it, you know?
Well, you know, it may very well be. You know how terms in the tech community kind of go through this life cycle where, that's an interesting way of looking at the world. Gamification. And then pretty soon everybody's saying the word gamification.
Yep.
At the point
yep.
That you're
yep.
sick of hearing gamification, right?
Right.
And, you know, we got to come up with another way of, you know, I think by 2027, the shock value of what Mark Zuckerberg has said is gone, right? And like you said, everybody's behind this goal to the point that we're almost tired of hearing about it. You know,
yep.
I mean, yeah, well, of course everybody's behind it. Yeah. Let's move on, find another way of expressing the same idea at that point. So
yeah, where people will grumble when they do get sick, they're going to say, well, why haven't they gotten rid of this one yet? You know, it'll be
yeah, that's right.
kind of like a sense of entitlement creeps
in. I've been sick in 5 years, and I would get this, you know, small, you know, rare thing. Exactly.
I think that is a bright future when we start thinking about what we'll be complaining about in 10 years, and it'll be the fact that, I can't believe I got sick. That is just, you know. I mean, we say that now. But we don't really feel entitled to not be sick, and I think by 2027 there might actually be that sense, right? That I shouldn't have to be sick. Why is this happening to me?
I need to be. This is not a first world problem, being sick. Why am I having to deal with this? So
exactly.
Yeah, it's by that point. And you know, think about it, Phil. I mean, we right now in the world we live in right now. I mean, we've clean water, you know, just in, you know, in the developed parts of the world, we got it pretty good, but we still expect to get a sniffle at least once a year. Right.
And maybe even some
sort of digestive bug or something once or twice a year. That we don't expect to get through a year without having some kind of issue at some point. Right. Well,
right.
I think by that point it's every 5 years or so, or maybe even, you know, you're hopeful that, well, you know, 5 years has passed since I've been ill and things are getting better all the time with this. Maybe I'll never get sick again.
I think in 10 years, let me give you an analogy. In 10 years, if you get sick, that's going to feel to you like checking into a hotel and they don't have Wi-Fi. Okay, it's an affront. Okay?
What kind of a weird thing is this?
Yeah, how did this happen? Come on, you've got to be kidding. That feeling. That's where I think we'll be. And you know, Stephen, with that, we've actually we've run out of time. Before we ran out of amazing stuff that'll be happening by 2027. This was fun. We got to remember to do more shows like this. I think we've only kind of scratched the surface on this. So if I was going to make one more prediction for 2017, going back to Tuesday's show, I'd say we're going to talk a little bit more about the 10-year time frame. I think there's a lot we should do with it.
Absolutely. It's been
all right. Well, hey, great talking with you, Stephen. All the best to you for your New Year's celebration. Look forward to being with you on the show in 2017. Thank you all for being with us, and we will be back next year. And until next time, live to see us.